to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant debates in fantasy baseball each week. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and I'm here as always with my co-host Shelley Verstrate to talk through both sides of the hottest fantasy baseball debates right now with some of the greatest minds in the industry. We took the 4th of July off for some rest and relaxation, but we were definitely busy with FAB and managing our teams while we were on our break. How did your last couple of fantasy baseball weeks go, Shelley?
It's been going okay. I did the Bozo thing and got David Festa and Davis Daniel because my pitching stinks, especially in touts. I dropped McKenzie and Maeda, so I was just like, these pitchers suck, so let me go for some other ones. And I think that I didn't do well there either. So, you know, it's kind of been okay.
I am crushing and pitching everywhere this year, except for the On the Wire Listener League that I did maybe like, I think we drafted that in early February, maybe late January. And the reason I'm not crushing and pitching there, which was predictable at the time, but also it was such a pitcher heavy draft that guys were going like two rounds earlier because everybody was draft. It was like a pitcherless draft. Everybody was drafting pitchers. I was like, well, okay, I'm going to take Kyle Schwarber in the fifth. Like, I just kept taking bats that were falling. I was like, I will figure this pitching thing out later. Everybody else can fight over these guys, but my pitching there is kind of atrocious. Everywhere else, pitching has been a strength. And part of it is because I just hit on some of the right guys. Speaking of hitting on the right guys, our guest today is excellent at it. We're excited to welcome Lucas Beery to the show. You know Lucas from his work for FPN Fantasy and as the winner of the 2023 NFBC Online Auction Championship. I know him as a league mate who is always challenging me in GLARF. I think we are literally back to back right now, or we were earlier today when I was looking at this. Lucas, welcome to the show.
Thank you all for having me. Really excited. Been listening to each show every week, and it's been really good. Excited to kind of sit back, talk to some really good baseball minds, and have a good time.
Oh, we're excited to have you. Lucas, I always learned so much from chatting with you about baseball. And honestly, the in-person GLARF draft is one of my favorite weekends Absolutely. Of the year. So thrilled to have you on the show. As a reminder, this is a debate show. So sort of the thing that we're doing different here is you get 3 minutes to make your case. Your opponent gets 3 minutes to make their case. The moderator role will shift throughout. There's a question and answer period between the debaters that can either be questions for the moderator or questions from the debaters for each other. And then if we haven't reached consensus at that point in time, we'll have 1 minute rebuttals. But every now and again, we find that we agree and that makes 1 minute rebuttals kind of pointless. So with that, we're going to jump right in. We're going to keep it topical. We're 1 week from the All-Star break, y'all. It is crazy, but the baseball season is going so fast. And for this debate, I wanted to talk through some fantasy All-Star snubs. Admittedly, the All-Star game doesn't count for anything for fantasy purposes, but there are some guys who are having seriously awesome seasons that were snubbed in for the Midsummer Classic. And I'm going to throw out some names here who I think should obviously be in this game who are not, even though not all of them are going to be in our debate. Luis Gil, not going to the All-Star game. Michael Busch, who hit a home run against the Orioles today for the Chicago Cubs, not going to the All-Star game. Bryce Terang, who has been just a revelation. If you got Bryce Terang in like the late 20th round of your draft or whatever, and he's got so many stolen bases for you, just like absolutely hitting for the Orioles or hitting for the Brewers at all times. Sorry, I've got the Orioles on in the background, y'all. Every now and again it happens. There are so many guys here who are deserving, but not going to play in the Midsummer Classic in Los Angeles. Shelley and Lucas, I'm curious to hear which guys you think are the biggest snubs. And Lucas, as our guest, we'll start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So for my biggest snub, going into a hot team after they got the blessing of Grimace with the New York Mets and Brandon Nimmo. Now, a lot of fantasy managers or even somewhat real life baseball fans might think Brandon Nimmo is an extremely boring player, a guy that Shelley would like. But if you look at him, he's really been unbelievably consistent. Since 2022, he has the sixth most WAR among all outfielders, ahead of Ronald Acuna, Julio Rodriguez. Yes, it is a counting statistic, so attendance will help him, but he pretty much does everything. We all know him as an elite on-base percentage guy. He still is that. And this year, his power is just on another level for his career. Shows up every day. He plays a little bit in the center field, not every day, but I think he was snubbed from the All-Star team.
Yeah, that's a great call out. I also love the Grimace reference there. The post Grimace Mets, man, you don't want to face them. I watch them come into Wrigley and just make mincemeat out of my Cubs. Shelly, who is your All-Star game snub that you're going to go to bat for?
Yeah, I usually don't have too many qualms when it comes to the All-Star, voting, because it's someone from every team has to make it. Mm-hmm. So there's always that one guy where you're wait. And then you're oh yeah, that they have to have a Rockies representative or whatever. but when I was looking at, the rosters, one name just I'm why is this guy not on there? And it was Christian Walker of the Diamondbacks. According to the Fangraphs player rater, he is the number one rated first baseman with $30.40 earned, just a little bit above Bryce Harper, and about $3 more than Freddie Freeman. Harper and Freeman, made it, which I'm not upset that they made it because they're fantastic. But I'm looking at the NL roster as it's currently constructed, and I like Luis Arraez as much as anybody else, but Christian Walker needs some hype, needs some love. I mean, just let him hit in Dodger Stadium where he just crushes all the time. It's I don't think I've ever had him on a fantasy team because I'm always oh, he's older, he's gonna fall off. But he has been fantastic for three seasons, and I don't know, he needs to be an All-Star because his season so far is outstanding.
I love both of the guys that you picked here because they are, as Lucas mentioned, they're the boring guys that help you win your league, right? Yes. These are not. Brandon Nimmo and Christian Walker are not the sexy picks coming into draft day. Nobody is sitting there writing up the how Christian Walker is going to win you your league this year piece in January. And yet, if you took Christian Walker and he's sitting right now at the eighth or ninth best player in the league, according to the player rater, you're happy with it. And you got him super late. You didn't have to spend early draft capital on him. Shelly, you mentioned the Dodger Stadium piece of this, and I'm going to lean into that for 1 second because earlier today, somebody posted an aerial shot of Dodger Stadium, and in one of the quote tweets, they called it Walker Stadium because he owns it. Aside from Christian Walker should get to hit at Dodger Stadium, what would he have to do to get himself into the conversation as an elite first baseman? Because I totally understand why we all picked Bryce Harper way earlier, and I'm definitely not saying Christian Walker should be a second or third round guy. But we pass on him again and again. And I say this as a person who passed on Christian Walker a bunch of times. I'm like, I get Anthony Rizzo later. I get Jose Abreu later. And that was wrong. I should have taken Christian Walker.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, it's just always age. And I'm like, oh, he's probably not going to do what he did last year. And Arizona was a really, really fun team last year. But I'm like, can they do it again? Let me just wait. I can get Anthony Rizzo. The short porch, just short porch. That's all I'm thinking, short porch. So I think it's just a multitude of factors. Maybe if he was on a more prominent team, if he was on the Yankees, if he was on the Dodgers, if he was on a bigger team, he would probably go up in draft cost or whatever. But I think it's just he's in Arizona. And even though they did make it to the World Series, they just don't get the love I think that they deserve. Outside of Corbin Carroll, which has not gone so well this year.
It's a great point about your teams. And I think that as people who play in some really competitive fantasy leagues, we like to think we're immune from that sort of price inflation that comes with team name, but we're definitely not, right? So many of the Atlanta players went really early in a draft because you're not just buying into the talent of the Atlanta lineup, you're also buying into all of the counting stats that can accrue because Ozzie Albies hits right near Austin Riley, hits right near Ronald Acuna Jr. You're trying to stack all of those things, but it's a great point that we sometimes miss on the guys who are excellent players playing for middling teams. Similar question to you, Lucas. Brandon Nimmo is one of these guys year after year. I find myself looking up and he's an excellent value. He's somebody who could absolutely help you win your league. And we just pass on him. What is going on with Brandon Nimmo? Why do we pass on him?
I think it's just the steals are not at a at an elevated rate where people feel like it's helping their team. Whenever I did drafts with some co-managers, I would bring up Brandon Nimmo and they would know it was coming and they'd be like, well, he doesn't steal many bases. Well, he's one steal away from tying a career high. And even though he was a highly injury risk years ago, he's not anymore. So I'm going to give him credit to fix that problem. But he basically is kind of one of these guys, kind of like an Ian Happ, where he's not loud anywhere, but he shows up to the job and you look up and he has 21 home runs, you know, 95 runs and a decent average and you're good with it.
Yeah, anybody would take that on their team. Speaking of Ian Happ, he just hit a ball to Utah Street earlier, right before we started recording, which, look, Ian Happ is the streakiest player, man. I don't know. But if you got Ian Happ in the mid rounds of your draft, you're pretty happy with that right now, too. This isn't a debate in the same way that some of our debates are where you're like head to head. But I will give y'all each 1 minute to make your case for your guy over the other guy. So, Lucas, we'll start with you. Nimmo over Christian Walker. Only one gets to go to L.A. to play in the All-Star game. Why should it be Brandon Nimmo?
Oof, that's a tough one. Yeah, Walker's had such a good year. It's hard to argue against him, but I guess just the defensive component, I might give Nimmo a little bit more credit if we're talking a real life perspective. He's had a negative defensive war, but the fact that he can at least give you an option in center field is highly valuable. We see these teams with a horrible center fielder, and then that's why you see Kevin Kiermaier with a 70 WRC plus still get a regular role for years after he stopped hitting well.
That's a great point. And Shelley, what's your case for Christian Walker making the All-Star team if they get a, if they get a spot?
Yeah, I mean, Lucas makes a good point about the defensive component because, I mean, first base, it is what it is. I mean, he plays a good first base, but again, it's first base. But I don't know. He's hit 22 dingers so far this season, and we, you know, just passed the halfway point. So he hit, what, 33 last year and 36 the year before. So he's pushing for that again. So three consecutive seasons of possibly 30 plus home runs. Like you gotta give that, you know, give that dude his flowers.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Good stuff. To be clear, either one of these dudes would have an excellent game in the Midsummer Classic. And if you have them on your roster, you're probably really happy about it. Let's talk about dingers for a second though, because friend of the show, Jason Collette, who joined us a couple months ago to chat through one of his columns that I read every single week called Collette Calls, had another great one out a couple weeks ago. And I want to talk about this because he dove into that power outage and that offensive decline that all of us are seeing on our teams right now. Like, there are guys you drafted that you thought were going to hit you more home runs and they are not. There are guys you drafted that you thought were going to give you more RBIs and they are not. And one of the things that Jason Collette talks about is that balls that are being struck with the same force are traveling 2 to 3 feet less than they did in the early part of last season. So the year-over-year comparison, you're actually seeing balls travel a little bit less far than they did before. In previous years, we've looked at this and we've all kind of gone to the baseball. And Dr. Meredith Wills, who is an outstanding researcher, has proven the different quality of the balls. But Jason thinks there's something else going on here, maybe in terms of how the different parks are storing and transferring the balls. And I think he's onto something because I think that there are parks that we don't think of as offensive environments that are offensive environments right now. There are hitters who we don't necessarily think of as being the guys who would benefit from this type of offensive environment who are. So I have a question for the two of you. Is this just useful information that we put into our cap for next season with the draft and trying to think through how we think of teams differently? Or is there still time to adapt and use this knowledge to help our teams win in 2024 with half a season left? Shelley, I'll start this debate with you.
Yeah, at least for me, and maybe I'm just not like a great fantasy manager, especially with all this, you know, ball changing stuff from year to year. I don't really think too much about it because again, like 2019 was great and then it wasn't. And then it's was bad at the beginning of the year, but it's kind of come back a little bit with the change in temperature. So I'm like, I don't think, at least for me from year to year, I don't think too much about the ball specifically because again, it's going to change. For me, going forward in this particular year, as someone who is struggling to find power on the waiver wire, like good power, not just someone who is going to hit like 061 and give me one home run, something like that. I don't think that there's really much you can do currently to really fix a big hole. Now, like if there is like bunched up at like the bottom, maybe you can find someone who can give you like two or three spots. Maybe that's what you're looking for. But if you're looking for a huge jump, I don't really think that there's much you can do. You're just kind of stuck with the cards you got.
It's a really difficult situation because if you got, we were just talking about this off air. It's going to be relevant to another debate later, but one of the guys that I'm counting on for, you know, right around 30 home runs this year is Nelson Velasquez. I am heavily invested and he's hit for a little bit of power, but he's not seeing the power that he had last year in his short stint in Kansas City. He's currently in AAA. That's not a great situation for my fantasy teams. I'm also super reluctant to drop him because he looks like a guy who is probably going to get called up again later in the season. And do I want August Nelson Velasquez on my team? Yes. Do I think there's anybody on the waiver wire who can get me what I can get from August Nelson Velasquez? Absolutely not. And so it's an interesting quandary in terms of how we stash guys, in terms of how we adapt. Lucas, what are you doing with this power environment? What type of some moves are you making right now to try and adapt if you think you can?
Yeah, Shelley makes a lot of good points as far as sometimes, you know, after your draft, you kind of have who you have and there's only so many changes you can do. But I think there are some little changes you can do here and there. You know, especially if you're in a 12-team league, then we're really talking a full different ball game, which Shelley was probably thinking more 15. I know that's what she plays. But if you're in a 15-team league, I mean, you can look and see if you have a low power guy like a Jeff McNeil and just kick him to the curb. You can find, you know, see where your catchers are. See if you can get a guy who can run into one, even if he'll hurt your batting average. On top of that, I'm sure everyone who's been monitoring their teams closely has seen ERAs go up. Offense is coming up, so you'll have that chance to cash in on the hot heat in the summertime home runs. And really just looking at every roster spot, even if it's a decent player, if that player has minimal power upside, even like a Nico Horner in a 12-team league, pull that guy out of there if you're, you know, set on average and steals to a degree, and just scrutinize each roster spot to try to jam in that home runs, because you're going to have to outpace by a good long shot the teams ahead of you. But I think it is a possibility. It's at least worth a good shot.
Nico is an interesting guy to bring up, because if you drafted Nico like I did in a handful of places, you thought you were getting something like a 280 to 290 batting average with like 40 steals, and you are not right now. That does not look like what Nico Horner is giving you at all. In fact, kind of looks like Nico Horner and Jeff McNeil might be fighting each other for like a 260 batting average and not very many steals. And so I love that idea of trying to use that spot in a different way to get some sort of offensive advantage. Lucas, who are you looking to get that type of power input right now? Let's keep it to a 15 teamer right now, where I still think there are some options. I mean, I picked up Jesus Sanchez in a 15 teamer a couple of weeks ago. That's a guy who can run into them. He's probably like, is he the world's best hitter? No. Does he go on streaks where he's going to hit you 10 home runs in a month and a half? Yes. I am looking for power at that level. Are there guys or are there parts that you feel particularly good about investing in for power right now?
Two guys that I think have reasonable power outputs coming up is Rowdy Tellez and Andrew McCutchen. They're not big names, obviously. Cutchen used to be, but just kind of monitoring the trends and to a degree riding the hot hand. I think that can be a fallacy, but at the same time, if a guy's hitting well, you can kind of plug him in your lineup, especially if his skills look like they've upticked. Like Kyle Higashioka is another one that has been really warm as a catcher. Put him as your C2 and he'll give you more home runs rather than if you have a Kirk or even Kybert Ruiz. He's more of a batting average focused guy.
I love the Higashioka shout out. And I also love that you mentioned your second catcher. That's a place people aren't really looking
yes.
for upgrades. A lot of time you just kind of think you're stuck with whoever you're stuck with there. stream your second catcher spot. I'm really struggling in tout this year, and there's a bunch of reasons for it in terms of injuries and other stuff. I'm trying to pull myself out of the cellar there. And one of the things I just had to do about 3 weeks ago was get rid of Alejandro Kirk and just replace him with I'm just streaming that spot. I'm like, Jose Trevino, let's go. Kyle Higashioka, come on down. Like, Freddie Fermin, whoever you got is going to play. Please come play on my Tout Wars team, because I need a catcher, because Alejandro Kirk wasn't doing it for me. I think that second catcher spot is something we don't look at frequently. Sometimes it's a good spot you can stream. Shelly, you mentioned that it can be really difficult unless the points are set up right. And I think that that's something else we don't look at a lot, which is where are you and what can you gain, right? Like, if you are in a position where you can gain 6 or 7 points because everybody is bunched up in power at the bottom of your standings, that is a very different situation than if you are 15 home runs behind the next closest place. So I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I have, Google Sheets that track all this stuff. So I don't have to like go into like the league standings every time I'm doing FAB. I can just have another tab open and it shows me like the difference between, you know, how many I need to move up. And I noticed like in DARF, I was like 30 or 40 steals ahead of second place. And I'm like, oh, I don't need to put Jose Caballero in anymore. Let me put someone who might hit a ball or two over the fence, because I have Ellie, I have Caballero, I have Andres Jimenez. I have enough steals. Let me try to do something else. But it's definitely something, I mean, again, it depends on your league, maybe how active your league is. Do you need to look at your particular standings? But yeah, take a look at it, because again, you can notice that you're, you know, far and away like bullying this category. No one is really going to catch you, especially in 1 week. You know, just you can prioritize other players. It's just a different thing to look about instead of just pitching matchups.
No, I think that's good stuff. And I also think that that's something we don't talk about. We don't talk about as much like how to spot those gaps and where you can make moves and how you can make moves. And also, if you're just trying to battle for your league at the moment, you have moves you can make that are different than if you're trying to battle for an overall spot.
True.
Like I have a league where I'm close enough to the overall that I'm like, I really want to keep doing that. Well, I should probably punt saves in that league. And I'm also like, I can't punt saves in this league, because if I punt saves, I kick myself out of the overall, right? So it's one of those situations where you have to know all of the circumstances to make those decisions. This is great stuff. Lucas, 1 minute, what are you doing to try to get yourself some more home runs if you have one piece of advice to leave people with?
Kind of going back along the lines of what we were talking about as far as, you know, playing the hotter hand approach. Really look at the last 2 months, you know, I use barrel rate. It's a very basic statistic at this point, but it's a beautiful one in my mind. You can just find guys that are popping. Tyler Soderstrom was certainly one. Michael Toglia is another one. You might pick up 5 guys and 2 or 3 of them will bust, but if you get 1 or 2, that helps you, you know, as a mainstay, you're good to go.
Love that. And Shelly, I know that you're thinking more situationally and power might be something that you have to adapt to next season. But what is one move that you're going to try to make this for the rest of the season if you're short on power?
Take Jose Caballero out of all my lineups. to be honest, it's more of honestly doing like what Lucas does, churn a little bit more, even if it's like, even if it's some A's guys who have interesting barrel rates. He mentioned Tellez and McCutcheon. They, again, like they don't play in a hitter friendly ballpark, but they're doing like some really, really interesting things now. So it's more of just like biting the bullet and, you know, putting $2 or $3 down and, you know, just seeing where it goes. It's an easy drop for someone like those types of players. You can pick them up for cheap and drop them for cheap as well.
Yeah, I love the advice of streaming some of those guys, and particularly guys who are going to play every day. Andrew McCutcheon is a great example of a guy that we forget about, that it's like, oh, he's way more reliable and going to play every day. This is a great guy to put in your lineup. We are going to take a quick break for our sponsors. But on the flip side, we have a lot more debate for you, and we also have our Love It or Leave It. Be sure you stick around. All right. We're back. I think I am passing the moderating duties to Lucas.
Absolutely. So as far as our debate number three goes, we had kind of a fabapalooza the last few weeks with Noel V. Marte and James Wood, a couple of extremely, extremely exciting prospects. I myself was not successful in adding any James Wood, which is a big disappointment because I was dreaming about it, but, you know, funds didn't allow. As far as adding James Wood, were you, Sarah, or Shelley, either one chime in first, were you able to add James Wood this week?
I was able to add James Wood last week. So this is one of those quirks of Know Your League rules. In Tout Wars, James Wood was available. You could add him as a minor league player. And he had just got, you knew he was going to get called up for Monday. So it was one of these situations where it was like, you can add him before he plays. This actually worked to my advantage for a couple of reasons. One, I have a little bit of a hammer in Tout Wars, although I have a hammer and someone else has a hammer too. And it's a very weird situation. So in Tout, there is a unique league rule that if you draft somebody and they hit the injured list, you can redeem them for fab if they are going to miss the entire season. Listeners may recall that I picked Spencer Strider second overall. That means that I get the auction value for the second overall pick times 10 because of when he got hurt in the season. It's $550 extra dollars of fab. So I should be sitting on the largest fab hammer in the universe in Tout, but I am not, because Ronald Acuna Jr. went before Spencer Strider in Tout. And so Matt Truss is sitting on the largest fab hammer. So I've got like a mini hammer, right? So anyway, I used that hammer to pick up James Wood. I was really excited about it, actually. I needed an outfielder. Just mentioned Nelson Velasquez was on that team, not on that team right now. I needed an outfielder. James Wood was available. I had a $215 bid set for him about 30 minutes before fab ran. I bumped it to $254. And I was really glad I did, because DVR had put a second place bid of 227, and I would have lost James Wood to DVR. So we'll see how that works. I'm really happy about it. James Wood is one of those prospects that, and I know that we've seen a lot of prospects come up and fail. We see a lot of prospects come up and struggle. The jump from AAA to Major League Baseball is really hard, and maybe getting harder for a bunch of reasons. We'll talk about that later in the show. James Wood looks like a dude who can rake. He raked in spring training. He raked against major league pitching. The underlying metrics are good. He's a five-tool player. He looks like a guy who's going to play every day. The Nationals DFA'd Nick Senzel. Like, they're not playing around here, right? Like, they're like, we're good. We're going to go with this guy. And so I'm really excited with what I've seen from James Wood so far, but I admit that it was a hefty price tag. I'm not sure I would have gotten him if I had waited until after we saw what he did. And the cost was up in the $500, $600 range. And in Glarf, Wood went for $570 with a backup bid of, I think, $375. And I wasn't even close. I mean, I didn't have $375 to spend in Glarf on anyone, let alone one player. So kudos, Adam. I hope you enjoy. I think it was Adam who got him. Kudos, yes, Adam. I hope you enjoy your James Wood.
No, that's good stuff. Shelley, as a prospect person, did you want to add anything further on James Wood, or just curious?
I mean, I think James Wood is going to be a really, really fun player to have, and especially to watch, but definitely to roster in fantasy. I was a bit timid with my bids. I mean, I put in, 50, 60, 120 something dollars. I'm like, I'm probably not going to get James Wood, but if people are sleeping because they had too many hot dogs at July 4th and they're still sleeping by Sunday, maybe I can pick them up. I didn't. But what concerns me throughout James Wood's career, whenever he started a new level, whether it was high A, double A, triple A, he struggled like at the beginning, and then he picked it up. Right now, he's hitting very well, but I'm afraid that we're going to see that like rookie swoon. That's why I was a little bit timid. But that was kind of like why I was trying to pick up Xander Bogaerts where I could. I think he was only available in one league that I played, because people were a little bit, you know, a bit more heads up with how fast he's been healing. Like, I was surprised that he was already playing in games with a fractured shoulder. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Where is Trevor Story? I know it's a totally different fracture. So,
spoken like a true Red Sox fan.
Exactly. So it's like, I would rather put my money, real money and fab dollars, on someone who I know is going to hit probably in the heart of that Padres lineup. And I know what to expect from Xander. Yeah. Is it going to be the same type of ceiling that James Wood, if he hits everything? No, it's not going to be that. But I know what I'm getting from Xander. So I was trying to go for Xander more than James Wood.
No, I love that. And certainly a lot of utility in both of those players. Sarah, as far as, you know, going for the injury returnee versus the elite top of the scale prospect, you know, why do you think maybe going for a prospect might be more beneficial? Just a 1 minute rebuttal.
Well, so a couple things. One, I think that my heart, like where I normally live for fantasy baseball purposes, would say Xander for $60. Mm-hmm. Instead of James Wood for $570. Like, we know Xander Bogaerts can play at this level, and we know what Xander Bogaerts can do. James Wood is an unproven commodity, and a lot of prospects fail. One of the things I like to say on my Cubs podcast all the time is prospects aren't promises. And I say that because people hoard prospects. They're like, oh no, you can't do anything with Brennan Davis. You can't do anything with Matt Mervis. Look, Matt Mervis was not very good when he came up to the show. Brennan Davis is dealing with a back fracture, which is like the third back issue that he's had that is super serious. And I am sad about that because Brennan Davis is a really exciting prospect in the Cubs system who I've wanted to see for years now. And I'm just not sure we ever will. So prospects can look really promising in AA and really promising in AAA and do nothing in Major League Baseball. If you have a guy that you know can hit 300 in the show, you should opt for the guy that you know can hit 300 in the show. And one of the things that I think is a market inefficiency in how we play this game, and in particular how FAB works, is that we have a system where an unproven prospect and the hopes that that guy might be the next Ronald Acuna Jr. are worth 50% of your FAB budget. And the proven commodity coming back from injury is worth 6.5 or 7.5% of your FAB budget. And that, something's wrong with that. Like, that's not, the mathematics of that don't make any sense. That said, they fill different needs. And sure, if what you are looking, what you know you're getting out of Xander is high batting average, some power. He ran a little bit last year. I'm not sure how much the running thing is real, on a good team. James Wood, you can dream all of the dreams. You can dream the moon and the stars and back again. And you can dream he's the next Ronald Acuna. So I think that's why we spend the money the way we do. But I'm also not sure it's right. I think Shelley might be right.
No, that's absolutely true. It's been a long time since, you know, Tatis, Soto, Acuna were rookies. People mention those players all the time when it's when you're talking about a Wyatt Langford. But let's face it, that was over a half decade ago. So, Shelley, did you have one more further 1 minute rebuttal?
I really hope that James Wood knocks it out the park. Sadly, I cannot see him because I live in a blackout, so I have to wait to the MLB big inning so I can see him. But yeah, I hope he kills it. But I don't know, for me, just give me the steady Eddie old farts.
Very love good. It. I'm going to turn it back to you, Sarah.
Awesome. And honestly, I think that might be a smarter thing. And one of the things to think about when you're looking at your waiver wire, yeah, put in your keep him honest bid on the hot new prospect. But also don't forget about the guy who's Tommy Edman about to start a rehab assignment. Like, I know what I'm getting from Tommy Edman. I know exactly what Tommy Edman looks like in the show. And I've watched it, and the Cardinals love him, and they're going to play him every day. Right. So it's one of, you know, just keep in mind that some of these guys you can get for $50, $70 on the waiver wire as opposed to $570 on the waiver wire might be worth it. Anyway, moving on to our next debate. I think Shelley is moderating this one, actually.
Yes. So we're going to not talk about fantasy, but, you know, talk about real life, but put it like maybe a slight fantasy spin on it. So I want both of y'all to put on your GM caps for the Kansas City Royals. So I was looking at the Fangraphs playoff predictions because I just like looking at that occasionally just to, I don't know, I like to watch, I like to see how the graphs move and whatever. But I was seeing that Kansas City is sitting at a 27.6% chance to, you know, make, just even make the playoffs. And I was just like, oh, that seems, you know, a bit low, but they've kind of come down a little bit. But anyway, they still have a 27.6% chance. Like that's a pretty good chance. Definitely that they definitely did not have that the last couple of years. But so put on your GM hats as GM JJ Piccolo. Are you going to buy or are you going to sell? Sarah, I'll start with you.
If I'm the Royals, I'm buying. And I'm really excited about what's going on with this team. Number one, they have a lot of, they have some old guys who are doing it. Like Salvador Perez is resurgent Salvador Perez, which is super cool in fantasy. They have some young guys who are doing it too. And the thing that the Royals, can we all talk about the fact that the Royals turned Aroldis Chapman into Cole Reagans, which is like the wildest, kudos on that trade. That's insanity. I can't believe that happened. It's less like a video game trade. That is not a real life trade where you get a guy who's like, ah, look at what I can do. Anyway, the Royals are really interesting to me right now. And it's not just because they play in a division that's kind of weak. They are third place in their division. So they're not going to win. They're probably not going to chase down the Guardians, although they could. They're only about seven games back of the Guardians right now. The thing that is more interesting to me about the Royals right now is a way more basic stat. It's their run differential. They have a plus 56 run differential, and that usually means that you're a team that should win more games than you should lose. You're putting up more offense than you are letting other teams score. I think that's a great sign. It's time for baseball to be exciting in Kansas City again. They have some young stars who I think could take another step to another level. Like, let's be clear, signing Bobby Witt Jr. to that contract extension they signed him to at the start of the season, 10-10, A-plus move. That is the type of move that big franchises are scaring themselves out of making. And the Royals were like, nah, we're going to double down on our guy. This is the guy that we want on billboards for the next 10 years. Thank you, 10-10. Recommend it. Do it again. They've got MJ Melendez hits the ball hard. Nelson Velasquez in the minors hits the ball hard. They've got pitchers who can pitch. They've got talent on the base pass and defensive talent. I'm kind of here for this Royals team. I like them a lot. And right now they're sitting a game and a half out of a wild card spot. Wouldn't be stunned if they chased down one of the Twins or the Red Sox or the Yankees by the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, they're a really fun team. I mean, like you said, that Bobby Witt extension was absolutely fantastic. And I just love how he's just like embraced the city. It's just awesome. Lucas, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a good case there. You know, I used to live in Kansas City, and it's a great baseball town. It really is. They have a wonderful, they have the wonderful Negro Leagues Museum there. The team is so, the fans are so into the team, it's outrageous. Like, you go to a game, and you wouldn't believe how many Alcides Escobar jerseys you would see for a player that most fans would be like, okay, no big deal, but they love him. You know, they love your Alex Gordons of the world, and I want to see them win. But just realistically thinking about it, I think they've overperformed, especially on the pitching side. I think guys like Seth Lugo, Brady Singer, they've been unbelievable good this year, but I think they're going to come back down to earth. And as far as just their bullpen goes, you know, they're 29th in the major leagues in strikeout rate. Only the Colorado Rockies have a worse strikeout rate out of the bullpen. And that is an upgradable area, but every team wants to upgrade their bullpen, so it's not cheap. Additionally, offensively, you know, there's just some absolute zeros. You know, you're looking at a 70 to 75 WRC plus for guys like Kyle Isbell, MJ Melendez, and even Michael Garcia, who was looked at as a foundational piece for them in the beginning portions of the season. So I love the step forward. I like the direction of the team. They seem to be better placed pitching-wise. They couldn't get any worse. And they have a lot of excitement. But I don't know. I just think it might be a little risky to go for it when the buying opportunity is going to be so high with so few sellers this year.
No, that's very true. And I just kick it off to you with a question, Lucas. I'm just like looking at the people, you know, the players who would probably be like candidates to be maybe, you know, traded to another team. And do you think like you could like what type of return would you expect for someone like Michael Wacha, who has a player option for next year? So that's a little hard to trade as well. And Hunter Renfroe, they both actually have player options. So do you think that that diminishes the return that you would get? Because again, it's a player option. So it's like the team doesn't know if they're going to have them for next year as well.
Yeah, I would think that that could diminish things. And I think in the major leagues, with the owners being so tight-fisted with their cash, they're going to look at that player option as a potential risk. Because if he gets hurt, he's going to grab that player option. And a cheap owner is going to be like, well, there's risk that he could cost $16 million next year. And what if he gets hurt? I'm going to have to pay that money. So I'm not going to say that it's going to lower his value a lot, but I think that baseball owners sometimes, now the teams like the Dodgers, they don't play scared, but some teams have that conservative mindset, I guess.
Yeah, as a Red Sox fan, I know all well. And Sarah knows it as a Cubs fan too. But
Big fan.
Sarah, since you're, you know, taking the, you know, buy side, like which area, you know, obviously you want to tackle both, but which area would you want to tackle? Because we've seen some trade rumors about, you know, Jazz Chisholm is available. That could really help like the second base or maybe an outfield spot. But you know, the relief corps is quite poor as well, with Kansas City. So which one would you tackle at the GM?
That's a great question. And I also, can I just say, I love that we have puppy snores on this podcast. It is the best part of Fantasy Feud. And if you're not here for the Soto and Orsillo puppy snores, what are you even doing? It's my favorite part of the show. Anyway, here's the thing about the Royals. I think the offense plays. Like, I look at this lineup, Vinny Pascantino is really good. Salvador Perez, really good. Like they platooned a bunch of guys into positions that have made it work, right? Like Michael Massey has been doing more than you thought he was going to do. Yeah, I agree. Mikel Garcia and MJ Melendez have been a little bit of a disappointment. Actually, I still believe in MJ Melendez, even though I know I shouldn't anymore. He hits the ball so freaking hard. I just feel like he's going to figure it out someday.
I agree.
The starting rotation, Lucas is right. There's some names here that are questionable, but I actually think it also plays. Like Cole Ragans is Cole Ragans. We're done here. He's outstanding and ridiculous. You should watch him pitch. Seth Lugo might be a one-year wonder, but he's doing a thing that we're seeing repeated frequently, and it was a predictable thing. Like the guy who I consider one of the smartest pitching analysts on the planet is Eno Saris. And Eno was all in on Seth Lugo. If you listen to Eno talk any about baseball at all in the last few months, you know he was in on Seth Lugo, right? Alec Marsh has been shockingly good and is a guy that they're going to have for a little while here. So the thing I see with the Royals is they have something, they have a thing they can fix. They can upgrade a position or two, they can fix the bullpen. Those are fixable things that you can do with trades and prospects and moving some guys around. There are teams that don't have things they can fix. Like people come to, I'm a Cubs girl. We've talked about this on the show before. People are like, what could the Cubs do at the trade deadline? I'm like, no. They need like five arms in the bullpen and they probably need three position players. So I'm not sure. That's not a fixable problem at the trade deadline. They need like all of their guys to play better and a bullpen. I don't know how you trade for that, right? The Royals have a fixable thing here, and they have a positive run differential. I think this is a time that you go in as the Royals, and we all know that the playoffs in the current day and age are get there and get hot. It's not about being the greatest team over 162. The Dodgers, the Braves, they would all like a word. They go to the playoffs and they sit and they get their rest, and then they get promptly shown the door by the Arizona Diamondbacks or the Texas Rangers. So this Royals team strikes me as the type of team that could get hot.
Yeah, like you said, the Diamondbacks and Rangers did it last year. So, you know, why not Kansas City? Do any of y'all have any rebuttals? Or, I mean, I think it's pretty. I mean, personally, I kind of want them to buy because I love when teams buy, but I understand the sell point as well.
I agree with Sarah. The fact that they actually have clear-cut fixable issues will make it so they can upgrade easily. Because if you add two reasonable bullpen pieces, looks a lot prettier. I also like their makeup of the team, focusing on athletes up the middle with Bobby Witt. Kyle Isbell is a solid center fielder. And they have one of the most spacious ballparks, and it's the top ballpark in the majors for extra base hits. So they have a very athletic team that can cover as far as the fielding. They've always been a pitching and defense organization lately, last 10 years or so. And their farm system is so poor, that's why I'm worried to sell off of it. But it's also kind of one of those deals where it's like, well, it sucks so bad. Like, it's not that big a deal if you move a few guys. So I wouldn't mind them buying, but yeah.
I appreciate that, Lucas. And I also just want to say, like, I want the Royals to be rewarded for extending a franchise player. Chase down the Red Sox. Chase down the Yankees. Kick them out. Take their wild card spot and remind them that they should pay guys. That's my rebuttal. I think I'm moderating the next debate. So we're just going to call that one. And truly, I'm just so angry at big market teams who act like they can't afford real players and talent. It's honestly the bane of my existence. That's a rant for a different podcast. There was some Twitter chatter this week about Jacob Wilson, who I had to do a double take on these stats when I saw them. He is hitting 461, 494, 731. That is a slugging number, not an OPS, between AA Midland and AAA Las Vegas, with a short stint in the Arizona Complex League. However, FanGraphs currently has him projected to have just 20 grade game power. This is a Oakland Athletics minor leaguer, and y'all know we're interested when the Oakland Athletics have a guy that they could showcase. Is Jacob Wilson worth a stash? Shelley, I'm going to kick this to you first.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who stashed him in Doubtworth for $0, just because my team stinks and I need anything going for it. I stashed him. I think, like, his, you know, his professional, you know, career has been absolutely insane. You know, he's drafted last year by Oakland, 6th overall, out of Grand Canyon University. He's always been known for someone who can just hit. Like, that's just been his thing. And that's currently what he's doing. It's like, no matter where he goes, he hits. Again, major league pitching is going to be different than minor league pitching. But this level of contact is insane. Like, I have never seen anything like it before. Like, his strikeout rates is, let's see, this year it's like below 10%. Like, we're talking like 6-7% of a strikeout rate, which is absolutely insane. So we're talking about like Luis Arraez level contact, Stephen Kwan level contact. The big thing obviously is the power. But you know, I'm going to take a chance on this guy. Maybe he turns into a Nick Madrigal. I'm sorry, Sarah. I'm sorry to say that, you know, that name.
Oh, don't apologize to me. I'm not a Nick Madrigal fan. I knew that was a mistake when they did it. Continue.
Exactly. Yes. So maybe he's that type of guy, or maybe he's a Luis Arraez, or maybe he's a Stephen Kwan who gets into his power at some point. So I don't know. I took a gamble on it. It wasn't a lot of fab that I had to use. We'll see. I don't know when he's going to get caught up. He's only played 15 games in AAA. But again, it's Oakland's. They could use a guy like this to bring in, well, I don't know if fans are going to go, but, you know, maybe they can, you know, bring in a little bit, you know, get some hoorah before they go to Sacramento next year. So I don't know. It's an interesting stash. I just don't know exactly where it's going to go. But, you know, batting average is a category too.
No, I'm here for this. And I, Nick Madrigal jokes aside, I've been saying for years that Nico Horner is what people thought Nick Madrigal would be. Contact is a skill. Being able to not strike out is a skill. Being able to like slash the ball all over the field and hit 300 is a skill. And it's a skill that is increasingly rare in the game because of the stats that get foregrounded and the way player development happens. So when you find a guy who is striking out, I actually thought this was a typo when I looked at 4.3% of the time in AAA, that's worth a look. And that's just worth a look. Lucas, what do you think about stashing a guy like Jacob Wilson?
Yeah, a lot of interesting points, and he's a prospect that last year was affordable. He was lowly regarded as far as his stock. He was looked at as no power, you know, no upside, no steals. But realistically, when I look at this guy, he's a big leaguer, and I want a big leaguer on my team. Now, here's where the fantasy situation comes in. If you're in a 15 team league, a guy who has an excellent glove and strikes out extremely little and has a solid hit tool, I would love that guy in a 15 team league, like a Glarf league. But you know, if I'm on a Yahoo or an ESPN league, what's a little bit more shallow, you can completely forget this guy because he does not have a lot of upside. But if you want a guy that is going to be, I don't want to say the face of the Oakland rebuild, but solidly built into their lineup as a good gloved shortstop, he's going to have a nice big league career. I mean, even if he's an Andrelton Simmons type, that doesn't sound that exciting, but that's a stable guy that you can have and put into your lineup if you're the manager.
It's an interesting comp with Andrelton Simmons and another Cub who the Cubs got the worst of Andrelton Simmons, but Andrelton Simmons for years was a guy who was reliable that you could put in your roster and he could play. And in a 15 teamer, that is worth its weight in gold, especially at this time of year. I mean, when I look at teams like the A's, and Lucas, this is a question for you, but when I look at teams like the A's, I'm interested in guys with talents like this because they are going to get a shot and they're going to get an extended runway in that roster. Now, there are downsides to that. Like, you don't get the counting stats. You're not going to get, he's not going to have a bunch of guys on base to drive them in. He's not going to have a bunch of runs scored because other people drove him in. But he's got the playing time opportunity. How do you weigh the quality of the team with the quality of the player?
I really look at the playing time first and foremost so much. Like, obviously I would love to get, you know, in their heyday, the Houston Astros when they were rocking, and, you know, the Dodgers top of the lineup this year, bottom of the lineup, you don't want that. But, and that's the thing. Sometimes these elite teams we talked about before the show got started, you know, everyone wanted the Braves. Well, if you're the top offense, one of the most historic offenses of all time, you got nowhere to go but down. So sometimes that's another factor too. And it's interesting because I say that, and I'm going to want to have Baltimore Orioles on my team next year, but they could come down a little bit, or hey, maybe they could stay where they're at because they're a young ascending team. So more so on the waiver wire, I look at all the playing time I can get. And then in the draft tables, whenever I try to go for more quality with the volume as well.
It's a really great point about teams having nowhere to go but down. I mean, I think that if you drafted Phillies this year, you're pretty happy. If you drafted Rangers this year, you're like waiting for the team to heat up, although it looks like they might be heating up right now. It's kind of a gamble that we play about like quality of team during draft season. Shelley, I have a process question for you because I love that you can find players like this. You're so good at digging through prospect stats and seeing the guys who are gems that have not been talked about yet. And I learned so much doing this podcast with you every single week. How do you go out and find a guy like Jacob Wilson? How does he hit your radar?
Honestly, I go to Fangraphs, and they, on their roster resource, they have a minor league player rater thing. And I look at that like every 2 weeks. It usually, you can change the thing to the, you can do 30 days, you can do 14 days, you can do like 7 days, something like that. And I just, you know, toggle with those. And if I see a name constantly, like if I'm toggling, I'm like, who is this guy? Or if there's not someone I've ever seen before, I'll click on him and just see. So I just kind of like, I knew from who he was, from the draft last year. But yeah, I just kept seeing his name and I'm like, what does he do? I'm like, oh, that's what he's doing. And then I saw like a little bit of, Jacob Wilson talk. I think it was from the, Baseball America guys. I think they had, some type of write up on him, just because he's having a crazy season this year. But yeah, I really use the Fangraphs minor league player rater. It really does help. It's a nice, concise place because it's really hard to find concise, multi-level stats in one place.
That's absolute gold. Anybody that isn't taking notes on that, you got to fix that. And I completely agree with that, Shelly. I have never used this tool, but I'm going to add this to the toolbox. Like the other thing I've noticed too, and I'm sure you probably agree, like usually when you're looking at like minor league numbers or the worst is minor league splits of righties to lefties, like the user interface is rough. So the fact that this exists is a lot better than most anything else I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's I'm honestly I was taking notes. I'm just like this is a new part of my process that I'm going to do every single week because I think these are the types of things that really great players like Shelly are doing, and that's a way you get an edge, right? You find the guy before anybody else knows what who that person is going to be, and you're there when they just start talking about them. So that looks like a smart pickup. That's a $0 pickup. I don't think there's any rebuttals here. I just think we're all jealous that Shelly got a $0 pickup of somebody I'm going to put a couple of dollars of fab on in the coming weeks. And let's see what happens from Jacob Wilson. It looks like Lucas is going to moderate our last debate, but first we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, Lucas is going to bring us through our last debate. We also have our Love It or Leave It, so stick around. All right, we are back. Lucas, I am going to kick it to you.
Alrighty, so for our last debates, and of course, you know, heading into the drafts, there was a lot of pitchers that were stashed away and held. Some of them, unfortunately, were dropped and picked up by other teams. But as far as these injured pitchers go, who have begun their rehab and are ready to join the rotation, who would you rather roster between Kodai Senga or Jeffrey Springs? And I'll throw one curveball in here that's not on the list, but I'll throw Robbie Ray out there as well if you're really wanting to feel frisky. So go ahead and start with us, Sarah.
Ooh, Robbie Ray. That's interesting. I'm going to stick to just the two that we started with here because I think these are really interesting comparisons. I'm going to take the Senga side of this and for a couple of reasons. One, I loved what we saw from Senga last season, the K per nine over 10, almost up to 11. That ghost fork is wicked. And we watched him deal with some control issues, but the control issues I thought got better as the season went on. Also, I love where he pitches. He's pitching in New York for the National League. That's a great park to pitch in. I think that he's walking into the Grimace Mets. Like the Grimace Mets are undefeated because Grimace. And I just feel like they're not undefeated. I'm joking. But my point is that I think the Kodai Senga is walking into a good environment. Looks like the rest of season projections on Fangraphs, depending on what you're looking at, all have him slotted for between 54 and 58 innings remaining. They think that that K per nine rate is going to be at least as like about as good as it was last year, right around 10 K per nine. The walk rate might improve a little bit. And you're probably going to get a handful of wins. You're probably going to get a decent number of strikeouts. I think Kodai Senga is great. That said, I like Jeffrey Springs a lot. Jeffrey Springs was one of my most rostered players last year. And if this Tampa Bay team was a little bit better and didn't look like they were on the cusp of maybe selling, I might be more interested in Jeffrey Springs. I just think the Mets might, I can't believe I'm about to say this. It feels like I'm about to curse the Mets, but the Mets might have more win potential than the Rays for a pitcher rest of season with an innings limit. And I am going to side with Senga for that.
Alrighty, let's kick it over to you, Shelley. What do you think?
I always forget that Robbie Ray exists. Like, like every time I hear his name on a podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah. Wow. But anyway, I'm gonna go with Springs here because I have not looked to see what Robbie Ray is doing because again, I have forgotten about him. But I'm gonna go with Springs just because I don't know, we saw it a little bit longer and he's pitching extremely well, at least in the, you know, in AAA. He has a 2.70 ERA across 13 and a third innings with 19 strikeouts and only one walk. That is phenomenal. Again, it's AAA. The hitting isn't really that great. But I'm going to go with him. I've seen him strike out guys. I've seen him be absolutely dominant prior to that Tommy John injury. The bad part is that he does pitch for the Rays. He's been on a pitch limit so far. He pitched in his last game, which was on the 3rd of July. He pitched four innings. And again, the Rays seem to be like they're might be on the sell mode. We saw the trade of Aaron Civale, what was it, last week? And they traded a reliever today to the Mets, actually. So they seem to be in a little bit of a sell mode. So yeah, they might limit his innings going forward, which limits his wins. And then the Rays have been kind of disappointing from like an offense perspective, but I don't know. Just give me Jeffrey Springs. I like Sarah, I had him everywhere last year. I picked him up off the waiver wire for basically nothing and loved it. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, put my chips in the Springs basket.
Yeah, both are going to be big additions to fantasy clubs in all formats, 10-team leagues as well. So I love these conversations because they're going to be viable for every fantasy manager. Now, as far as did you want to kick it back for a quick 1 minute rebuttal, or did you want me to chime in a little bit, Sarah?
I mean, if you have any questions for either of us, I'm actually staring at Robbie Ray right now because I had not thought through the Robbie Ray portion of this, and I have thoughts on Robbie Ray.
We'll go ahead about Robbie Ray because, again, he's going to be another guy, if he's available in Fab, is going to be a game changer for some team.
So I think I still want Senga, but a couple of things about Ray stand out to me. And let me be really clear for a second. Part of the reason I would still want Senga, I think he's going to get slightly more innings. I think the Mets are more invested in leaving him in for the fifth or sixth inning and getting him those win situations. I think the strikeout potential across all three of these guys is basically sixes. Like, I think if I were building a team of my own, like if I were a general manager, I would want Springs over both of these dudes, but I am not. I'm trying to build my fantasy team and get a certain number of stats. And so I probably still want Senga. But despite the fact that Ray is currently projected for about 14 innings less than Senga or Springs, he pitches in San Francisco. Like, that is a crazy ballpark to pitch. That's a great ballpark for Robbie Ray to pitch in. I'm sorry. Like, I just am. I love that for him. I think that's outstanding. And we have seen Robbie Ray when he has the walks under control. He is electric. He's not a 10 K per nine guy. He's a 12 K per nine guy, and he's not walking anyone. And if he can do that in San Francisco for a team that needs him down the stretch, he might edge out both of these guys rest of season.
Shelley, did you want to go ahead and chime in a little bit more?
The funny thing about Robbie Ray and Jeffrey Springs, they both have 24 strikeouts. Robbie Ray did that in 16 innings and Springs did it in 15 and a third. You know, they both have two walks. So it's kind of like they're on the same track. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe on that part, I might go with Ray because I trust the Giants to let him go. I don't really trust the Rays to really do anything to make fantasy managers happy. So, yeah, I might switch my allegiance to Ray, even over Senga.
I like that. And I think as Sarah mentioned, Ray has the highest, well, maybe not. He might have the highest K upside, saying it could have him beat. I think Springs is going to be more the whip asset, but I think Senga has the higher ceiling for this year. But I think, and this is from a person that had Senga stashed and unfortunately kind of gave up on him because he had multiple setbacks this year. And listen, I'm just like, okay, is this ever going to happen? And I moved on. I regret it. But, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And he's had all these setbacks. So I'm like, he's fragile slightly, but he has electric upside to say the least. Now, I do want to say one quick thing that I noticed looking at some of these guys' fan tracks and fan graphs player pages. So Cody Senga actually has a player opt-out after 2025 if he can reach 400 innings by then. So I find that to be very interesting because for his career, he has 166.1 innings. So if you give him the 54 innings that's projected from Steamer for him, he'll only need 180 innings next year in order to reach that opt out. And if he's a solid pitcher, it would be in the Mets' best interest to keep him under contract because he's only making about $15 million, which is less than Michael Walker. So maybe they slow roll his innings to a degree, but I just kind of noticed that and figured I would mention it.
Yeah, that's a great call out because I couldn't actually see a reason that the Mets wouldn't just let him go, especially given all of the angst. I've never seen a team that is as angsty as the New York Mets. They like win six in a row and they're angsty. It's a it's a wild thing. The Mets are an ontology, y'all. I just cannot. But that's interesting. If they have a contractual incentive to keep him under innings, that might hedge against some of the things I was saying about his win potential. I love this, though. This is a great question. These are all three great pitchers who we're all probably looking to pick up or wish we had stashed, and we'll be curious to see how it plays out for sure. All right. I think that concludes the debate portion of our podcast, but we're going to move to our love it or leave it. And Lucas, as our guest, you brought in a great love it or leave it today. I'd love to hear from you first.
Yeah. So with my love it or leave it, I just wanted to reference an article written by Cody Stavenhagen of The Athletic. And he kind of wrote about a topic that, and I'm sure listeners have heard of it, that there's a growing gap between the AAA level and the major league level. And you see these guys come up like Jared Kelnick, and, you know, they're the gift to God's green earth. And then the next thing you know, they just can't hit their weight. And it's sad sometimes, but just this huge level gap from the AAA level to the major leagues. He talks to players like Spencer Torkelson, and he talks to countless coaches in the article, talks about different reasons. And in fact, he brought up a concept that I had never thought of, and I'm fascinated by it. I love watching what the Rays do, because it seems like they're on the cutting edge, to say the least. And they like to bring guys up, give them a chance to play in the major leagues, and send them back down. You've seen this happen with Jonathan Aranda, and they do that. So then when they go back to the AAA level, it's easier. So they can, it's kind of like when you're swinging a bat with a donut on it. It's the way I see it. You know, you go to the major leagues, you get overwhelmed, you go back to AAA, and now you're a big fish in a small pond again. So I love that article. I found it fascinating. I want to bookmark it and read it again in the winter time. And it's just, I highly recommend it.
I love that you shared this. I actually hadn't seen that article, and then I went back and read it when you put it in the show notes. It's a great read. We'll make sure that it's linked so that you can find it easily in the show notes. One of the things that I thought was so interesting here, because I've been trying to figure out which guys at AAA are going to make it to the major leagues and stick, and which guys are not. And I've got a whole bunch of different theories on who sticks and why, and what types of skills are being missed. But one of the things that I've been wondering about a ton, and I don't think we have an answer to it, but I know I've heard Eno talk about this. I know I've heard Nick Pollock talk about this. I've heard other people talk about this. The gap between what you're seeing as a hitter from pitchers at the major leagues from AAA is just huge. And I think it's being exacerbated by the ABS system. I think that, like, yes, automatic balls and strikes are making that a harder gap to overcome than it used to be. You can rack yourself up a nice little K rate or walk rate in the minors right now in a way that you couldn't in the past. And when you get to the major leagues, that's gone. And I think there's something, I don't know what it is that's there, but there's something there.
I'm curious if, and this is so off topic, but it's somewhat related. Have you all heard of this? I don't know exactly what it is, but it's like a program that hitters use that simulates the pitcher. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I was just reading. I have heard about this. I've heard about it on a couple different podcasts. I was just reading about it today, and I don't remember if it was the same article that we were just talking about or if it was a different one, because I read a bunch of things today. But yeah, no, it's a pitching machine that simulates the movement and stuff of an individual pitcher, which has to be a huge advantage if you face a guy like Kodai Senga, or you face a guy like Shota Imanaga, or you face a guy like who is really different in terms of how they deliver stuff. Tell us more, Lucas.
Well, I don't know a lot about it, so I figured we might just have a quick little discussion, because it seems kind of related as far as like training and like when these guys go to AAA, once they've already mastered that level, it's going to be hard for them to be challenged there, and you're kind of plateauing, if not worsening, because you're not getting sharpened up against tough competition. But I had read some of these pitchers were like, oh, the players shouldn't start to use the traject in the game. If the game starts, you shouldn't be allowed to use it. But it's also kind of like, well, the hitters can say, well, you shouldn't be able to use this substance to make your grip better. So it's just a gray area, I guess. And I find it to be intriguing. And I don't think many fantasy outlets have covered the traject concept or anything about it.
No, it's a great question. And I think the first person I heard talk about this was Eno, and he was saying that the Giants use this. And I remember thinking, why doesn't every team use this? Like, if you could mimic a pitcher and be like, hey, I'm going to watch 500 pitches of this pitcher before I face him, that seems like an advantage. I don't know, Shelley, what do you think of the way batting technology is changing, just how hitters can even adapt?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating. And again, why doesn't every team do it? It kind of reminds me back, like, when Mookie Betts was a prospect, they used to do like some type of like bat training or like something like brain thing, but it's kind of like a video game or something. And they realized that Mookie Betts was Mookie Betts. So it just seems like it's like everything is evolving. And yeah, I just think it's fascinating. It blows my mind that they can make machines like do that.
They realized Mookie Betts was Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts, who would be a professional bowler if he wasn't a professional baseball player, because he's literally that good at all the things. Shelley, what is your love it or leave it today?
Yeah, this is one that I found like really odd and weird and strange, but also really cool. So in the American League, there is a team called the Sioux City X's, and they needed some pitching. So they called a professional pitcher that happened to be an Iowa State representative. And he's 44 years old, and he gets out on the mound as an emergency starting pitcher. And he throws 100 pitches, strikes out 2 in 6 2/3 innings. I don't know how many runs he let up, but I just think it was like really cool. It's like, oh, we need somebody. Oh, just call up the representative. Just throw him in. We got this. And it's just like a 44-year-old guy just like out there just, you know, chucking fastballs or whatever. I just thought it was just like the weirdest thing that I'm like, I love baseball for stuff like this.
Yeah, that's great. This is the best political story I've heard in weeks.
Yes.
I'm very here for this Iowa representative who is an emergency pitcher and can still strike guys out. Like 100 pitches is no joke, right? Like they throw a position player and he throws like 18 pitches and gets some strikeouts with an Ephus pitch or whatever, and we all kind of laugh about 100 pitches. That's a real game. Like this guy can play. I love it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I saw the story, it reminded me of Sleeper in the Bust when they talk about politician or reliever. So I had tagged Justin Mason in Pulse 4 and said, like, this is a real deal of this. So just saying.
What did they say?
I don't know if they saw it yet or not, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm dying to, we're going to have to get Justin and Paul to weigh in on this. Friends of the show, Justin Mason, Pulse 4, the excellent Sleeper and the Best podcast. I went back and forth here. I have a love it and a leave it, and I'm going to take some prerogative and just share both of them because I can't decide which one I would rather share. But I'm going to start with the serious one, and then I'll end on a high note because I feel like that's the right way to do this thing. There's an aerial shot of Dodger Stadium floating around this beautiful ballpark surrounded by parking lots. Like, if you've ever been to Dodger Stadium, you know that it takes 3 innings to get in. It takes 3 innings to get out. Like, it's just a mess of parking lots. And not think about the fact that this used to be people's homes, and there were neighborhoods in Chavez Ravine, and people lived there, and they were eminent domained out of their land so that a stadium and parking lots could be built there. Anyway, there's an excellent book on this by a guy named Eric Nussbaum. It's called Stealing Home. It's a wonderful read. I read it a few years ago. I cannot recommend it highly enough. It won't make you hate baseball or anything, but it will make you think about this game and where it's played. There are no Dodger fans like the Latinos that cheer for the Dodgers at Chavez Ravine. It's amazing and it's beautiful. And it's also complicated. And I think that we would all do well as we look at these shots of Chavez Ravine to remember all of that. And so check out the book Stealing Home by Eric Nussbaum. It's a great read. It's a wonderful book. It's really well written. And it's an important story that a lot of people who watch baseball haven't heard before.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to check that out. Yeah, thanks.
Of course. And because I don't want to be a total downer, my original love it for today. If you've not seen Logan Gilbert calling his parents about being selected to the All-Star game and inviting them to come watch him play in Texas, like, you have to do that. Like, you have to go watch Logan Gilbert talk to his parents about making the All-Star team and seeing if they'll come watch him pitch. So do that and it'll make you happy. But also, like, take a look at this Dodger Stadium nonsense, because you should know that too. We should know the happy things in baseball. We should know the sad things in baseball.
As with life, we should know the happy things and the bad things.
Hence love it or leave it. Hence the whole point of this segment of the show. Exactly. Sorry for making things complicated on a Tuesday night, y'all. Lucas, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a wonderful episode. I'm so glad that you were here to hang out with us for a little bit. What are you working on? Where can people find you and your work?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was so much fun. Very thought-provoking info and some new tools to play with from Shelley. So love that. And yeah, you can check out my work at FTN. I do a weekly hitter primer where I kind of go through and rank the hitters for each week and look at like injury notes as well as a little bit of schedule notes and look at promotions and demotions. So it's a little bit all over the place for an article, but it gives you a lot of prevalent info if you've been really busy over the weekend or something.
Nice. Yeah, Lucas's stuff is amazing. As you've probably gathered from the show, he's one of the great thinkers about this game, and just I learn so much every time I get a chance to have a conversation with you. Thank you so much for joining us for some debates on Fantasy Feud this week. Shelley, remind people where they can find you on Twitter and find your baseball takes.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ShelleyV_643. Sometimes my baseball takes are there. Most of the time here lately, it's just been Orsillo and Soto. So it's like semi-baseball takes. So
they count as baseball takes.
Exactly. Okay.
So my favorite baseball takes.
Exactly.
You can find me at @BCB_Sarah. You can find the pod at @PLFantasyFeud. We will be back next week with all of the debates to inform your moves in your fantasy baseball season. Until next time.